Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah takes place May 15th to the 17th, 2020, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by The Wargaming Company. Wish you could play a great Napoleonics wargame that's different from the same old stuff? Try ESR. ESR makes Napoleonics accessible, a complete system with you as the core commander. Start an army with ESR box sets or use your existing collection. It's meaty enough for diehards, but friendly for newcomers. Visit thewargamingcompany.com. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am Jonathan J. Reinhardt. We are recording live from Let's Roll Con 2020, a virtual gaming convention, here being held May 16, 2020, because with the pandemic, no one's able to go anywhere to do anything. But that's okay, because we have a day of fun, games, events, and all sorts of stuff. So Adrian and I are recording live today, and let's do the intro. Normally, and bear with me, and let's see, Adrian, do you think I'm going to mess this up?
I don't know. You've been doing better lately, but it's still probably 50-50 either way.
Yeah. Well, now I say that I'm going to mess it up. So here we go. So welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the TSR podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. We are here today to talk about all sorts of really cool stuff here at Wargaming Recon. But most importantly, I'm joined by the one and only Mr. Adrian Benson. Adrian, how are you today?
Hey, John, I'm doing great considering I've been working all day and will be working all night.
Hey, that happens to the worst of us. Since we are recording live, I do just want to let people know that this is going out live to everyone on YouTube and Facebook. So if you are watching and you want to, you can leave a comment. You can leave a comment. Let us know that you're here. You can interact with us that way, and we will include it into the podcast as applicable. So, Adrian, it's been quite a while since you and I have done one of these things, isn't it?
Yeah, it has been. I don't even know when the last one we did was together.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know that I can remember, to be honest. It's been so long ago. It's quite crazy.
I'd like to say I've missed you, but, you know.
I got the feeling that maybe you were rather comfortable with not.
I can go either way. You know, it's like I haven't had much to talk about, so nobody's been missing anything by me not being around. So
you have been missed, though. People have been letting me know that they miss that you haven't been on any of the streams that we've been doing or any of the episodes, and that they really love, and this comes up, you know, this comes up all the time. They love our dynamic together. They think we're really great, that you're the old curmudgeon and you just get grouchy with me and I'm like a puppy dog who doesn't give up.
I don't know if I get grouchy with you. I guess I kick you when you need to be kicked, which is most of the time, but I know people like it. And I mean, it's, I like being here, but like I say, it's like just the way things have been going. It's just, you would think being locked in your house for some ridiculously long, unconscionable amount of time that you would have plenty of time to do things and get together and whatnot. But I almost feel like I've had less time than I have like during normal times, or just going to work, coming home, that kind of a thing. And I guess it's because I have so much more free time. I've been doing a lot more, I don't know, sort of work related things. So,
I want to say that you're in IT, and I mean, IT doesn't sleep, and there's probably higher demands being placed on you for all sorts of stuff. And
there has been less than I sort of expected, but there has been. Yeah, I am blessed being a, you know, software developer and working in IT. I can do all that from home. I know a lot of people aren't so lucky, so feelings for them. But yeah, it's been a bit crazy, and not just IT, but I work in healthcare IT. So, but
yeah, that makes a difference.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, it's just, and like I was trying to say, I was like, you would think I would have time for painting and all kinds of stuff like that, but I haven't. I've done literally no painting. I know there have been people who have been knocking it out of the park with their projects they've had on the shelf for, you know, years. In some cases, I've seen guys posting on blogs and whatnot. I've done nothing. Well, not nothing. I've painted a few of the Napoleonic 10mm stuff, and I painted a all of one figure for a 28mm Seven Years War battalion that I've been working on for God knows how long. But that's been it, and it's been largely unimpressive.
I don't know, but it strikes me funny that you've painted one 28mm figure, which
one,
I can't say anything.
Well, the reason I painted one guy is, as much as I love the period, Napoleonic 7 years war. Well, this was a 7 years war guy, but Napoleonic 7 year war, it's all kind of the same. The figure that I had left to do to finish up the battalion was a musician, and they've got all the lace and the detail, and it's just like looking at it and thinking about painting it every time I did it, it made me angry. But I finally did it. So. So, but that's been the sum total of my painting during lockdown.
I think I'm somewhere in between you and some of the other people. I've realized that I do not like to paint miniatures, and that's probably anathema to people, but that generally just, it doesn't make me happy. And I haven't touched those, but what I've been doing is lots of MDF.
Tons of MDF you've been doing, yeah.
I'm almost through the entire backlog of MDF that I thought was going to take like a year's time to build and paint and then talk about on the show.
Yeah.
And it has not. And I should say that, like you, I am lucky enough to be able to work from home. I work for municipal government, and I know the stereotype is work, but like I work. But even with that, and doing all the things that one does and everything, I have more time because I don't have to spend an hour every day driving to pick up the kids from places before I get home and then do like the whole evening routine. My wife is also lucky enough to work from home. So that's been really a blessing for both of us. I mean, I don't want to paint it all rosy, you know, because like there's been challenges for us and everyone else. But that's why I've been doing the pandemic coffee break live streams Monday through Fridays. I've been doing 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, which also gets saved onto our YouTube and Facebook channels. And I've shared some of the struggles on there. But like generally, I've had more time. And I probably shouldn't say this, but really, I'm really enjoying this whole like don't go anywhere and stay at home kind of thing, because it's like my ideal world where I never have to go anywhere and see anybody.
Yeah, it's my ideal world when it's on my terms. This is just pissing me off. But it's not all bad. I mean, one of the things that's kind of coming out of it is my employer, at least, is because almost the entire organization, the IT side anyway, has largely been working from home. You know, some people can't, like the hardware people and the service, a lot of the service support teams. Mm-hmm. But it's really kind of opened their eyes to this, hey, remote work could be a thing. So they may be expanding that in the future. So hey, it's not all bad, you know, silver linings, all that kind of thing, polishing a sneaker, whatever you want to call it. So maybe something decent will come out of it anyways.
Yeah, that could be huge for you. I mean, it's no secret we haven't done like fanfare over this because honestly it makes me sad. But I mean, you're going to be someday when we're allowed to go out and do things, you're going to be moving to another state. Well,
God knows now. Because one of the predicates of that, of course, was, again, not to go into detail on it because it's utterly ungaming related. But
well, it's personal.
Yeah. So my wife has to actually be able to spin up the business that she bought, and you can't really do that given current circumstances. So, but regardless of her being able to get it started or not, she is unemployed as of the end of June. So.
Oh, that I did not know. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, so thanks to the ludicrous response to this pandemic, yeah, it's kind of throwing things in a monkey wrench. So I don't know how that's all going to work out now. Well, I don't know the timeline, let me put it that way.
Yeah, I should say that previously the thinking was that you guys would be moving to another state, and I was very sad at that prospect. Happy for you, but sad that you wouldn't be here. Thinking that, like, if your work was really like, hey, people can work for remotely, that could be really good for you, because you can do your job anywhere in the world. So you could be in another state and still do your job and not have to worry.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are definitely people at my company, not in my group, but at my company that do work remote. I mean, we've got people in, there's at least three people I know in Texas, a couple in Colorado. So yeah, there's no need to be in a particular physical location.
You mentioned that you haven't been really painting anything, but you have been doing kind of some hobby stuff, right? Because I think you got some new games, didn't you?
If you count clicking buy now on Amazon as doing hobby stuff, then yeah, I suppose so.
Yes, I count that as doing hobby stuff. My therapist says we're supposed to lower our expectations now because of everything. So that counts as hobby stuff.
I don't know if I totally agree with that, but okay, hobby stuff then. Yeah, I have picked up a couple of games. I bought, and I think I may have posted about this on the Facebook page. I don't remember, but I did pick up a couple of GMT games that I've been looking at for quite a while, and I finally pulled the trigger on.
What's the first one you bought?
The first one is actually still in the shrink wrap.
So you were really excited to get that one.
Well, the thing is, I don't want to open it up and have the stuff everywhere all over the house. I know what'll happen if I do that. So until I'm ready to actually do it, but it's Stalingrad 42, and it covers what you would expect: the German campaign, the invasion of the Caucasus in 1942, that ultimately led to the Battle of Stalingrad. I think the units in it are basically division sized and smaller, so you can go, I think the smallest unit goes all the way down to perhaps a regimental size, but basically it's Operation Blue. So
it was bad.
Yeah. So but it covers the whole, it's not just the campaign in and around Stalingrad. It's the entire invasion of the Caucasus region to theoretically capture the oil fields, which they never really got close to and was really unrealistic. But I am looking forward to trying that out. It should be, I've looked at some reviews on YouTube, of course, and playthroughs. One channel, I'll throw one YouTube channel out there that's worth checking out, to cover almost, I think, exclusively board games, to do a lot of GMT stuff, but it's the Player's Aid, very good channel. I looked at their stuff on Stalingrad 42 before I actually pulled the trigger on it, and I was like, I was sold on it. And I think it should be soloable. My problem with soloing anything is having a place to set it up and leave it set up. If I can manage to do that, maybe I'll shoot some video of it and throw that up, but don't count on that, because I don't know if that's actually going to be possible or going to happen. The maps are, for the scenarios where you're required to use two maps, which you're not required to for all the scenarios in the game, I don't have anywhere to set that up. But the smaller, shorter scenarios that focus on particular parts of the campaign, I could probably manage one of those. But anyway, we'll see. So yeah, I've been wanting that for quite a long time. I was hoping to be able to play it when things open up again. I don't know if it's your kind of a game or not, but a couple of people that we game with would probably enjoy it. I'm thinking of Court and John. But I don't know if we could even play it in a fairly long session, like in the evenings at the local game store, the way we usually go. I don't know if it would work out that way or not, but it would be worth a shot. Go ahead.
No, just I was going to say, according to Amazon, it does say it's 2 to 4 players, and for the time scale, each turn is 4 to 7 days.
Yeah.
So that makes me think it takes a really long time if each in-game turn represents 4 to 7 days.
Well, that's just based on the scale and everything. Yeah, I mean, you know, the game turn is 4 days, but you may not do anything significant in that turn. So
that's,
you know,
true.
It's just like marking the passage of time kind of a thing. I'm looking forward to trying it out. It's nice in that, excuse me, a lot of these operational level games, I shouldn't say a lot, but many of them tend to have like really high unit density, high counter density on the board.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun on the one hand, but on the other hand, it makes for really slow play. And based on the fact that the units in this game are actually larger scale, you know, they tend to be brigade and division sized, your counter density is a lot lower. So I think just because of that, if nothing else, the game would play tend to play faster. And I think the reviews that I watched on YouTube, I think some of them were saying that you could get through some of the shorter campaign games in, you know, maybe 4 hours or so. So that's not too bad. I mean, we spend that long playing Bolt Action or whatever. So
that's true.
So, but anyway, I'm looking forward to giving that a roll either solo or with somebody else here soon, well, hopefully soon.
Well, the wonderful thing is with this whole pandemic, people are doing stuff from home. And I mean, we're recording this live at a virtual gaming convention. So in theory, you could play remotely with someone.
Yeah, you could. I haven't checked. There might even be a Vassal module for it. I don't know.
I bet there must be.
Yeah, but yeah, we're not actually doing this live from a virtual gaming convention, John, because that's not possible.
Of course it is. Magic.
Oh my word. Yeah, but anyway, that's the that was the first one I picked up that I've been interested in for quite some time, and the second one I grabbed is one that is actually possibly even more appealing because I tend towards the tactical, but that's The Last 100 Yards. And it is, when did they release it? I think it was just this past year. I think it was 2019 release. But it's yet another entry into the extremely overcrowded tactical World War II board game genre or space, whatever you would, however you prefer to call it. But it does have some unique mechanics in the way that it works. How to explain it without actually showing a playthrough? The way it handles the passage of time is in the game is quite unique. You're never quite sure exactly how long the game is going to last. So a scenario may be set up and it's like you have 30 minutes of time to complete whatever your objective is, take a couple of buildings, or get off the mill, whatever the objective of the scenario is, you'll say you'll have 30 minutes, 45 minutes to complete that. And rather than marking actual turns, the game keeps track of the number of points the attacker and defender accrue through obtaining objectives, destroying enemy units, and also the passage of time. So, and you'd never know exactly how much time is going to have passed. So you have an activation phase, and one or the other player will win initiative for that activation phase. And then for that phase of the game, that person is actually activating their units, and they're the only one who can do unit activations. The other player, the player who didn't win the initiative, they can react to the first player's activations, but they don't actually get to activate any of their units. They're a little bit hamstrung in what they can react to. But as you go through this, at the end of a phase, at the end of an activation phase, you roll a die, and that will determine how much time has actually passed. And that can be anywhere from 2 to 3 minutes to, I think the high value is 6 minutes. So depending on how you roll on that time tracker, your 30-minute game may only last 6 turns, and that may, or it could last twice that long, and you don't know. So there's an element of variability to it there. Between that and the way that they track the points, and the other thing that comes into play again, which is I should set this up and show it, but is the player's aid, check their videos out on it. But the way the casualty track works, if you start to take casualties, that will actually add points to the other guy's score, and in some cases subtract time from the amount of time that you have left to achieve your objective. So it's very interesting, and I don't know if it's unique, but it's unique in my experience as a way of tracking victory conditions and passage of time in the game. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is the action reaction is very fluid in the game. So it's like the active player will say he'll move a unit, a couple of squads, whatever. And the inactive player gets a chance to react to that. So he'll declare fire on those units that have moved. And you just place a fire attack marker on the units that have moved. No fire gets resolved until actually the end of the activation phase. It all happens at once. So, and it's kind of interesting how they take into account the modifiers for fire, for example. So it's like running into a building is obviously good for you. You get cover from that. But if you moved to get into that building and the reaction fire on you is while you're moving, which it will be, then you get much less of a cover value for that building, or rather, so to say, you get negative modifiers from having moved, because the theory is this is all taking place in small bite-sized bits of time, but it's all happening at the same time. So as your squad is moving into the building, that's when you're being shot at. The guys who are reacting to your movement don't wait until, okay, they're in the building, now we'll fire. It's like a continuous kind of thing. And the game, the mechanics of the game do very well of tracking that and showing sort of a fluid battle situation. It's really different and unique. So I'm looking forward to I've set it up. I've played a little bit of it solo, but I'm looking forward to trying that face to face with somebody, because it's really a unique system, and it's actually a little bit difficult to explain to somebody. It is not difficult when you sit down and actually play it, but at least for me to sit here and try to explain it to people without actually doing a playthrough or whatever, it's kind of hard. But it's really unique and interesting. So it is another entry into a very crowded space, but it's definitely a worthwhile entry. I know they're looking forward to expanding it. Right now, the core game itself is Americans and Germans, and essentially all the scenarios. And you can design any scenario you want. You can do anything you want. But the what's in the box is focusing on the Normandy invasion. You know, the invasion itself, and then the period afterwards, the breakout, which is no bad place to start. Everybody tends to start with Germans and Russians, so it's kind of nice that somebody decided to start with Germans and Americans for a change. But there are going to be expansions. I actually think the next one is due out fairly soon, and it's not going to be a huge expansion. The only thing it's going to do is add airborne troops to the mix and air landing. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. But I think this is a system they're going to expand a lot. I think that's their plans anyway. I hope it is, because just the core game itself is really impressive to me.
I got to say, it sounds really dynamic and almost like you're playing a board game version of a movie.
That's a good word. Yeah, that's a good word, dynamic. It is very dynamic. I mean, it's very different from other games in the space. Like I always talk about ASL, and I love ASL. But if you were looking at it, I think, I can't say until I've got more experience with it under my belt and actually play with actual humans, but this is probably a better game. It's not nearly as detailed and crunchy as ASL. I mean, nothing is, but it may actually do a better job of, I hate to use the word simulation because it's a game, but simulating that feel of a dynamic combat, a dynamic situation.
Yeah, it gives you a sense of urgency. You're trying to do whatever you need to because you don't know when it'll all end.
It is, and because of that time tracker thing, passive play is losing play. You've got to be kind. You can't be stupid, but you do have to be aggressive.
Well, it sounds like something that would be of interest to me.
Yeah, I think it would actually.
And just in case anyone's interested, it was designed, because I know people for GMT games, they really get into who the different designers are. It was designed by Mike Denson. And you're right, it came out not that long ago, and the expansion, according to their website, The Last 100 Yards, Volume 2, Airborne Over Europe, they're doing the P500, for those who don't know, that's like their pre-order kind of thing. They need a certain number of pre-orders in order to make a game. Pre-order price is only $39, and yeah, Afterwards it's going to be $59, which is the price of the core game. So you could save yourself $20 by pre-ordering it, which is worth it.
Yep, totally.
No, it sounds delightful. I look forward to giving it a try sometime.
Yeah, we definitely will. Maybe that'll be the first thing we do after lockdown is over.
Yeah, we have lots of things we need to be doing, and lots of things I look forward to doing.
Yeah. I'm less interested in doing things that we need to do and stuff that I want to do in the immediate post panic period. So yeah, no, we can definitely get that on the table. It's and it plays fast. It'll play fast once you get the hang of the mechanics. So. I would say even a big scenario in that game would probably be, I don't know, maybe 3 hours tops. So
I've been getting a lot of gaming purchases, well, a lot of purchases in general lately, but a lot of purchases. And actually something just came today that has me really excited. And no one's had a chance to see this. So I got this. Actually, it's a role-playing game, which is not something I normally would talk about. And when was the last time you heard me excited about a role-playing game, Adrian?
I can't think of ever hearing you excited about a role-playing game. Maybe when Rachel ran Dungeon World for us, that would be the last time.
Yeah, I was pretty excited about that. So this actually came from, and since we are doing this live, there's video of this on our YouTube channel and Facebook page, so you can see. Oh, and it's not going to see because of my thing. This came from Frog God Games, and just matter. We'll have to do a picture, but they brand their boxes with all their branding and stuff. I've never seen this done on a cardboard box before. They get like their logos and all that kind of stuff on it.
Looks really cool with the Wargaming Recon banner behind it.
Yeah, well, we tried, but. Enough out of you. It's Bunnies and Burrows. It's a role-playing game with your rabbit.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I can see where you would be excited about that.
So it's inspired by Watership Down, for anyone who's ever read that. I did not because it was too depressing. But from what I know, this is kind of like, you're not just like cute and cuddly bunnies, but like there's terrible things out there. And so what you do is you're reacting to your environment, to the farmers, to the animals that are trying to kill you and eat you. And so it's all just like, how do you survive? How do you do stuff? And I'm just going to read the blurb on the back. And I should say this is $44.99. I paid half price because they were doing a discount. I don't know if they still have the discount or not. So I got it for next to nothing. And when you buy a hardcover from them, which is, and I know this is controversial, and again, I don't care because I'm the one with the microphone. I think when you buy a hard copy of a set of rules, you should get the digital for free. And there, and I don't care. And you do with this. So the description here says Bunnies and Burrows was first published in 1976 by Fantasy Games Unlimited. It provided a complete role-playing game system in a fantasy setting. But unlike prior RPGs, it allowed you to role-play as an intelligent rabbit rather than a traditional humanoid race. In this new edition, you can still play as a rabbit, but you also have the option to play as a raccoon, squirrel, chipmunk, skunk, porcupine, opossum, jackrabbit, or armadillo, each with their own characteristics and abilities. Many aspects of the original game have been enhanced. A full logical system of herbalism is presented, forming an analog to the magic systems in other fantasy role-playing games. And so then inside, I'm not going to show this because it's all green, but there's a map that is gorgeous. and I can show some. So they actually do fighter classes, an empath class. You have runner and maverick bunnies. Look at this. This is crazy. And I am really super excited about all of this. The artwork looks kind of cool. This is it has new book smell, which is a thing. And it has just like this whole thing, like animals you're going to come across, kangaroo rats and all sorts of other stuff. Like this is just, it's crazy. So I'm actually really excited about that. And maybe slightly related to that, which came the other day, and I don't have it handy to show anyone, but I showed in a pandemic coffee break. I got a set of bunnies that came in from Bad Squiddo Games, which was really exciting. And I've been spending lots and lots of money, like a drunken sailor, to which I'm sure you can identify, and on like gear and stuff for the show. And I'm ashamed to say how much I've spent and what I bought, but it's all getting put to good use.
Good. Yeah. No, so when are you gonna be running that on Roll20? Pretty soon, I would imagine, right?
Well, so I'll tell you that for work, I went to an online training session on how to use Roll20. So I got paid to learn how to use Roll20, and I'm pretty excited about it.
By the taxpayers.
Yes. So we can run events for people.
Right.
Because that's what we do. I don't know. I'm really go on, laugh it up, Purple. I'm really excited about this game, and so when I have time to actually start reading it and learn how to play, I think this could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, that would be cool.
And I bought also some digital stuff for it. They have like adventures and things. And you know, actually, let me see if I can pull up their website quick. To just pull people. Now, if this was a pandemic coffee break, which is primarily a video thing, I would share my screen. But whereas this is an audio podcast, none of you can see anything, so it doesn't really matter. But they do have parts of their product line for this that is just like they went whole hog on this thing, so that you have like the core game that you can buy, and you can choose to get a PDF only if you so choose. And I'm just waiting for stuff to load. Things are terrible. But then they have like their like pre-made encounters, I guess, is what you would call them. So there's one called, where the heck did it go? The Garden Raid. So that's obviously Peter Rabbit, right?
Yeah.
The Fairy Ring of the Nibble Onions. They got one called the Mound of Basking Vultures. which just gave me a laugh. And maybe you think that Alex might like that one, being a Holmesian. Escape from Fox Island. And so they have like funny names for stuff and funny things. And you can tell that they've kind of had a good time with this, which is something that I like. And so that's just, I don't know, it's pretty cool that I thought. But we'll see where that goes. But I don't think I bought a role-playing game in over a decade. So this was pretty big for me.
That is. That's huge. That's funny. Court says he had the original.
Yeah. Do you want to migrate into a listener feedback section?
No, I just, that one just kind of popped out at me. There has been some. Excuse me again. I was going to say that game actually kind of reminds me of one that I have it. I bought it as a gift for my daughter, but Burrows and Badgers, which is a neat little skirmish game where the characters are all cute little animals. Well, some of them are actually not so cute, but I've actually got some models for that I have primed up. I need to paint them. They've got a whole line of figures goes along with it. But anyway, may be able to give that a try because you only need like 6 figures per side.
That's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all.
To give another shout out to Bad Squirtle Games, they do all sorts of wildlife animals that are really cool and very affordable. Yep. In addition to all their realistic female historical models. And then you have a new rule set, right, that you bought or you're thinking of buying. Is that right?
I did buy it, actually. It came Friday, actually. I haven't had time to read it yet. This was a set of rules that I've been interested in for a while. It's been around in various forms for a long time, the earlier mid-80s anyways. But it's a set of rules for Napoleonic grand battles that no actual normal human being can ever play. but it's called In the Grandest Manner, Napoleonic War Games. And the goal of, maybe it's not the actual goal, but the point of the rules as they are written is to get tons and tons and tons of figures on the table. They're for doing truly large scale Napoleonic battles. The recommended figure scale, and I'm not a big fan of games that have figure scales, although having said that, I guess Fire and Fury, but the recommended figure scale is one figure equals 6 men.
Oh, okay.
And if you consider that, depending on the time period and everything, because Napoleonics is all messed up, but say a Napoleonic line battalion of 1807, 1808, authorized strength was 800 men. There were 2 battalions per regiment, actually 3 if you count the depot battalion. So let's say if everybody is at full strength and you have the 2 field battalions in the field, that is 1,600 men divided by 6. That's how many figures you need to represent that one regiment. That's a lot of figures.
Lot of figures.
Yeah, the author of the rules is a guy named Jed Elliott. I think that's how it's pronounced. Maybe it's Jed Elliott. I'm not actually sure. But you can be flexible with your figure scale, but the only thing that's hard and fast in the rules is, according to him, the way it's set up is, and I haven't had time to read all of it yet, but it's the ground scale. So you're looking at one figure equals approximately 6 men, and the ground scale is 1 inch equals 25 yards. 25 yards is not very far. And if you think about the size of table that you would need to fight even a very small Napoleonic battle, it's mind-boggling.
Well, you're not going to use the table. This is one of those where you play on the gym floor.
Yeah, it's like when we are able to put together 2 4x6 tables at the local game store to put on a big game, we think we've really accomplished something. He says in the introduction to the rules that he actually is in a place now where he's built a separate building on his property in order to play these rules. I guess his table. Let me read it so I don't mess it up.
Oh, please do, because this is going to be legendary.
The battlefield I use is still large, approximately 400 square feet. 400 what? Square feet. So that's roughly half my house. Table, you're talking a 20 by 20 table. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's ludicrous. That's what I say. Oh, no God. Normal person is ever going to play these rules. As I say, they've been around in various incarnations since the early to mid 80s. I think this particular edition, which I got from Cavalier Books in England, was written in 2001, 2002. yeah, just crazy though, the amount of figures. And it's like, you look at the setups that he had, and he has a website too. Maybe we should, well, I'll post that on the Facebook page when we get done here.
Cool.
But his website, you can go there and he's got pictures of the battle setups and everything. And it is impressive to look at, but the figure density, even on a gigantic table like that, is so high. While it looks impressive, it doesn't look to me like there's not a lot of room. There's no space to maneuver. It's like everybody is shoulder to shoulder and face to face. And it's like,
maybe that's the point.
Maybe it is. I mean, I'm not sure how these games would actually play out, but I did want to check it out. They weren't that expensive. So I was like, yeah, what the heck? And I mean, you know me, I read rules like normal people read novels. I just enjoy it. So
true.
But yeah, I picked that up with no intention of ever actually playing it. We'll never be able to play it. It's ridiculous. But sometimes ridiculous is fun.
That's okay.
These the rules are themselves. Oh, Tom says Tom Primer, he says they tried playing it once. good for them. But oh my God, I can't even imagine painting enough figures to do it.
To be fair, according to the Board Game Geek entry, I know you said this is really can go for any scale. It does say that it was developed for 10 mil.
Developed for 10 millimeter. And if I was going to do it, I would do it in 6. But yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, if you went small enough, that whole 25 yard thing, while ridiculous, in my opinion, isn't as ridiculous as it would be. Like, if you were doing it in 28 or something crazy like that, then.
Oh, impossible.
But otherwise.
No way. Yeah, no, he says that in the introduction. He definitely designed it with 10 millimeter in mind. He says that's about the perfect figure scale for something like this, where there's enough detail on the model. They still look good when they're painted.
Yeah.
But they're small enough that, you know, you can put on good sized battles with a lot of figures. But yeah, it's just I don't know. I knew what it was like when I bought it, so I knew it was ridiculous. I knew it was going to never be played. And as I started reading through it and flipping through it, I was like, oh my God, how could anyone ever play this?
That's okay.
But, yeah. But no, anyway.
It intrigues me. If this was at a convention, I would give it a try.
This would never be at a convention because problems of size aside, this is not a simple, fast play set of rules. It is the opposite of simple and fast play, at least from what I can tell. So yeah, you would never see this at a convention, but if I had the opportunity to give it a try, I definitely would. But yeah, so that was a whimsical purchase, I guess you could say. Maybe
no, sometimes you need to do that. If we're going to talk about whimsy and things that are historical and fun, why don't we transition into the Lumber Mill segment? Lumber Mill is brought to all of you by thingsfromthebasement.com, makers of fine MDF and HDF kits. And actually earlier today, and I say today, but I mean because at the convention, I chatted with Jörg Bender of Things from the Basement about his upcoming May 2020 Kickstarter for Farms of Gettysburg, and he has sent some of it to me here for review copies. So thank you for the review copies, Jörg. And I thought I would just talk about one of them, and it's in partial assembly because one of the things that I've learned with kits from Things in the Basement, and I think we've talked about this before on the show, is that in general, I like to paint them before assembly, but some of them you kind of need to do it as you go along, or you need to do portions here and there. And so what he sent me is the Leister Farm from Gettysburg. And for those who don't know, that was the Union headquarters of it. And so I have the farmhouse in partial build. And just like the design on this thing is gorgeous. So like when you go at the floor of it, it's a standard floor, but then the chimney area has like this whole hearth with all this brick. So the brickwork is gorgeous on that. We can just kind of see the transition on it from wood to brick and how he's thought that out. And like for painting that, I wasn't quite sure what to do, but thankfully I have a bunch of blue painter's tape left over from when we bought the house and we were painting stuff, which is a lot longer than it would seem. And yet it's still good. So like I taped stuff off to do that and just spray painted it. It uses his standard roof mechanism, which I think is really gorgeous and really easy. So the assembly is really good. It's also sturdy. So you have a standard beam that goes across, and then you have nice A-frame underneath that kind of helps to support the roof. And then the roof just goes on Now, this one is interesting because there's a chimney, like I said, inside that comes out. And so he cuts the main beam off a little bit and puts a hole in the roof for the chimney to come out. But the roof doesn't meet like at a standard like peak, like how a kid would draw a roof house. It overlaps slightly and it's intended to. So either that was just kind of like a neat thing to do. And I also think you could have a little bit of fun with that where maybe in your world, you're not using it for Gettysburg. Why you would do that, I don't know, but you could. You buy it, you do whatever you want with it. And so maybe it's really old and decrepit. It's got a lot of water in there. So that's a cool place where you could do maybe some water damage that had happened to it and just add a little weathering there as well. And it does a neat thing because how the house is built on the side, it extends out and then there's a porch, which is, so the whole house on the exterior is painted in white. And when I was talking with Jorgen, you might know this, Adrian, because you've reenacted there and you know a fair bit of American Civil War. Do you know if the buildings down there were painted white as in a white paint, or were they whitewashed, or was it just that white was a accessible color to get at? Do you know?
Well, I don't know why they were painted white, but by and large, they were.
But you think it's actual white paint that they used and not like a whitewash?
Yeah, no, it was paint.
So, okay, because he wasn't sure about that.
I'm almost 100% certain it was paint and not like your, like the whitewash you would throw on a fence or whatever like that.
Yeah, okay. So these are all white, and then York painted the inside of his walls white, but I like to do mine, especially when the wood is like a brown. And I wasn't sure what to do. So did that tape measure, taping thing, and it worked pretty well. It didn't do it perfectly. But when it's put together, that front section of the porch will have that. And so you'll actually get that nice, dynamic look for it. It'll blend as well. Things are going to go together really well. The windows are fun little pieces to build where you actually have the window and then you get to put the frame around it. So that was kind of cool. And then the new for him, actually, all the doors move on all the kits. All of them open. So that's really neat. And it opens on this. It swings back and forth. So it's really cool. But it also uses his standard door design. So they're his typical doors that you will see if you've bought any kits from him. And has a little handle in the front. You push in, and then it has a Z pattern on the back that you put on that prevents the door from opening too far on the inside. It has some cool architectural features on all of these, and has a neat chimney with a stone hearth on mine. I just painted the whole thing red because I did. But this is nicely made and easy to go together. I did encounter a problem with mine where the instructions were wrong, but they've been fixed, so that's no longer an issue. And the Kickstarter is going to be coming out late May 2020. No details yet on pricing or anything like that. But I believe what he's intending to do for people who are into the pledges for it, I believe each individual farm will be its own thing. So like the Leicester farm will be like the barn and the farmhouse as a pledge level. I think he's also going to do a pledge level where you can just get the HQs for the Confederates and for the Union. But otherwise, it's going to be like that. Some of the barns are huge, and he's also doing it in 15 mil. And Adrian, you and I need to pull our money and buy all of them because it's absolutely gorgeous. it's what it is. I was shocked by how lovely it is. And I was trying to think, what do we have? This may not be of interest to other people, but I guess I don't really care. What do we have for American Civil War? Well, we don't have 28s, right? Do we have 15s, 10s? What would we need?
Well, I've got a boatload of 6mm for Altar of Freedom.
Yeah.
And I don't have, I've got some 15mm. I've been thinking about a Civil War army. If I were going to do it, to be honest, I would probably do for something like Fire and Fury or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so 28s then.
No. I would do it in 10.
Oh, would you?
Yeah, but if yeah.
Would that be too small with the 15 mil buildings?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Okay.
The 15 millimeter buildings or the 28 millimeter buildings though could be used for tons of things. I'm not gonna build like big black powder armies of 28 millimeter troops. However, they could be usable with rule sets like Sharp Practice, Rebels and Patriots, stuff like that.
Muskets and Tomahawks.
I don't know about Muskets and Tomahawks because the architectural style is like way out from 7 Years' War. I mean, you can get away with it. Maybe
like some of the houses, I wondered.
Yeah, but like the big bank barns and stuff like that.
Well, no, not those, but like.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're serious about that and we want to do that, I would say that we should get the probably get the 28 millimeter versions.
Okay. Well, I think we will. So I want to thank Jorg for making that possible and for sponsoring the Lumber Mill segment. And then why don't we migrate into something we haven't done in a long time, but a listener feedback section. Since we are recording this live, we do have people who have been commenting and sharing thoughts. So first off, we have Jamie saying everyone loves great grumpy old Adrian. And I think that's true. And then I think this is a callback to when we were talking about what we've done in hobby stuff for the during this pandemic time. And Jamie says, I feel for Adrian. I've got some hobbying done for sure, but no epic amounts like some people have. It's been more work than usual for me during this time, but the kids being home has meant a little more than usual because I like to do things with them. Yeah, he's done a lot with his kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Jamie shares a lot of stuff on the Wargaming Recon Facebook fan club group. And let's see, we have Court saying good pick for your GMT games. And he says that the last one, the last 100 yards, he's been trying to get that one, that he thinks it is pretty different. And oddly enough, for Bunnies and Burrows, he says, you may not believe this, I have the original. He did not like only being able to count to four. Well, you're a bunny. I mean, what's a bunny going to know about counting?
What's he know about being an empath? But, you know, whatever.
Well, they're bunnies make people happy. And so they know about being cute and furry and cuddly.
I see.
All right. Just like a, well, I was going to say just like a cat, but a cat just doesn't care about anyone. So not like a cat, I guess. And then you mentioned Tom talking about In the Grand Manor. He says we tried playing that once. I think that's what we have for a show. Any other cool stuff you want to share before we wind down our episode?
No.
Very cool. Hey, no, that's okay. Why don't you remind everyone about how they can keep in touch with you and see what you're doing?
The various Wargaming Recon Facebook pages, the main page, and also the podcast fan club, and also on Twitter, although lately on Twitter, I've just been raging about politics, so use your discretion there. If you don't want to hear about it. Yeah, if you don't want to hear about it, stay away from me on Twitter.
And then we are on all the things as Wargaming Recon. I do want to remind everyone that for the length of the pandemic for which I am working from home. Mondays through Fridays, I am doing the pandemic coffee break, 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. So you can tune in and it's a more relaxed and formal kind of thing. And then another thing that I've been doing, and Adrian, I don't think I've shared this with you, but on Saturday nights, I've been recording a hobby hangout with people. So I live stream and work on some stuff. Last Saturday, I painted some stuff. And that's like a half hour, 45 minutes to kind of hang out and chat with people. So if people are free, that happens. And that gets streamed to our Facebook page. So that's a thing. And Adrian, if you ever want to hop onto that, that's something you and I can do. Just kind of informally hang out. You can read rolls and grumble. And oh, and you know, this is something. Actually, I want you to say on the podcast, because it came up in a pandemic coffee break. We're talking about scotch and whiskey.
Okay.
And people, I asked people what they thought for how you take your scotch or whiskey.
Oh, okay.
Now, how do you drink it normally?
It really depends on the whiskey. Generally, I prefer it neat, but there are some where Lafroig 10-year-old, for example, is very raw and very, you know, it's not well aged. Well, it's well aged, but it's not been in the keg for a long time. So it's still got a lot of the alcohol burn in that with the very, very heavily peated, which is one of the reasons I love it. It's like when you pour Lafroig, the 10-year-old anyway, it smells like dirt. It literally smells like dirt.
It does.
So that benefits from just a little bit of like really cold water in it. But generally, yeah, you know, so something like that, which I don't consider too outrageous, a little water, but neat, generally neat is the way I like it, because there's a line from the John Wayne film, The Quiet Man, and Maureen O'Hara is asking her father if he wants some water for his whiskey. And he says, woman, when I drink whiskey, I drink whiskey, and when I drink water, I drink water. So
that's good to know. The thinking among people were that you always and only drink whiskey straight. And I had to tell them that's not true, that I've been with you when you've drank it straight, but also when you've drank it with a little bit of water or an ice cube in it sometimes.
If it's like something really cheap, there's nothing wrong with putting ice in something like that. But I would say overall, people who said neat, they're basically correct. Yeah.
You know, they're not wrong. But they were surprised when I mentioned the other at all as a possibility. And I just thought people might like to hear it from you in your own voice.
It depends on the particular whiskey. Some of them definitely, and anyone will change it. I mean, not that I'm a big connoisseur or anything, but any of them will change the way it tastes, the experience of it, with a little bit of water in it. You don't want to use too much, because what's the point? Then you're not drinking whiskey anymore. But
true.
I prefer it neat, because like the man said, when I drink whiskey, I drink whiskey. That's what I want to taste. It's the same reason I don't put anything in my coffee. When I'm drinking coffee, that's what I want to taste. I don't want to taste milk and freaking sugar and mocha and all that garbage.
We got to get you on a pandemic coffee break, because there's been a lot of discussions about coffee on there. That's for another time. Adrian, thank you for being on here with me for this episode. This has been fantastic. I miss it.
Yeah, me too, actually. I'll have to try to get on one of the coffee breaks. I know we tried the other week and things blew up at work. It's actually very difficult, but if I can manage it, we'll get one in.
We'll do that, and we have more episodes coming out to people for the podcast. And I want to thank everyone who watched us live and heard us do an actual podcast episode. I hope it's as interesting as you thought it may be. I don't think. I'm going to keep my mouth shut. So thank you, everyone, for tuning into this episode of Wargaming Recon. As I said, we are on all the things as Wargaming Recon. Remember that no matter how busy you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how much time you're thinking, do I want to take my whiskey neat or not? Drink responsibly, only when so legal. Don't sue us. Know that you need to. I'm messing it up already. Oh, this is life. We knew it was going to happen, right? One of these things is going to go bad. You know that you have to. You need to keep on gaming. Okay, everyone. So that's the end of the episode. But for those of you who are here watching live, I do just want to let you know that there are some things going on at the convention that you should check out. Please head on over to letsrollcon.com and you can go and you can see all the stuff that's happening. You can still register for games that are going on later on. And then we have our marketplace where you can buy stuff from vendors. Foreground is offering 20% off. Things in the Basement is offering 20% off. Trilateral Games is doing a 10% discount on all products and free shipping for U.S. customers. We're selling our t-shirts. And then coming up at 4 o'clock, if you want to watch some events, Timothy Colonna of Trilateral Games is doing a paint and chat. I'm going to be talking with Game Master David Hill about using the Yamashiro Mountain Fort from Things from the Basement to do some gaming and tips and tricks for game masters. And then at 5 o'clock, I'm like 6 hours of this stuff, people. It's good, but it's a lot. At 5 o'clock, we're talking about the Fabric Treasury and Brianna Richardson and what she does there, selling dice bags and things. And if you happen to want to make a donation, we're raising money for Extra Life to help kids who need medical care and can't afford it. Their families can't afford it. If you make a donation of at least $10, and then you get to send us proof of your donation, email it to letsrollcon@gmail.com. So if you do at least a $10 donation, you have a chance where you can win a prize from the Fabric Treasury. And that's at 5 o'clock. And then we have more stuff later on. But I am most excited. And Adrian, if you are free, I know this is a work day for you, but if you're free, there's still slots for the 8 p.m. Cube of Death. Mike Kafis is running that, and I think you should get into it.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly when I have to start doing the next phase of the nonsense.
That's a shame. But I'm going to be playing in it. Jamie's playing in it, and we'll see who else is playing in it, and I'm really looking forward to it, so that's going to be a good time.
Oh, man, that would be a good time. There's just no way. There's no way.
Well, it's not like we never see you talk to Mike or anyone. So I'm sure we can get that to happen again sometime soon.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you everyone for watching, and I'll be back with the next live stream in a few moments. So I hope you will head on over to that to hear all about tips and tricks for being a game master. And Adrian, thank you so much.
No problem. Good times.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon on your mobile device. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the TSR Podcast Network. Visit wargamingrecon.com/TSRPN for more information and to learn about the other good shows on the network. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Wargaming Recon is dedicated to the memory of longtime listener Andrew. I ask all listeners to join me in a moment of silence in memory of Andrew. Thank you to everyone who backed our 2020 podcast season on Kickstarter. In particular, I would like to thank Bob Yates, Cigar Box Battle, Enfilade Convention, Jason Elliott, leader of TSR Games, John Vogel, Lead Bears Tufts, Nate Taylor of Dwarven Forge, Ryzen Phoenix GameCon, and Stefan Pagorny, founder of Dwarven Forge. We couldn't have been successful without the help of all of you. Thank you so very much, and hope you are enjoying this 2020 podcast season. Wargaming Recon is made possible by listeners like you. Become a Patreon backer to get behind-the-scenes content and new episodes before everyone else, starting at $1 per month. Visit wargamingrecon.com/Patreon to become a Patreon backer. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by The Wargaming Company. Wish you could play a great Napoleonics wargame that's different from the same old stuff? Try ESR. ESR makes Napoleonics accessible, a complete system with you as the core commander. Start an army with ESR box sets or use your existing collection. It's meaty enough for diehards, but friendly for newcomers. Visit thewargamingcompany.com. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by Enfilade. Enfilade is a flagship historical wargaming convention for the Northwest Historical Miniature Gaming Society. Enfilade is held annually over Memorial Day weekend at the Red Lion Inn in Olympia, Washington. Enjoy the largest historical miniature gaming convention west of the Mississippi at Enfilade. Visit www.nhmgscitadel.com for more information. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. They're the folks behind Huzzah! Historical Wargaming for New England. Huzzah takes place May 15th to the 17th, 2020, at the Doubletree in South Portland, Maine. Experience some of the best historical wargaming at Huzzah! Visit www.huzzahcon.com for more information.